If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money in markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what today's about? Me. In my book that came out, but no, seriously, we have Senator Ted Cruz here, Michael Berry is here, Carol Roth is here. We have all kinds of fun to have tonight, and I'm right.
For too long, we've been led to believe that communism is a thing of the past. But the truth is, communism is alive. It's here, and it's infiltrating every aspect of American life. Introducing the Anti-Communist Manifesto by Jesse Kelly, the practical guide for patriots ready to defend our nation from its most dangerous enemy. Discover the shocking extent of communist infiltration in our education system, their alliance with American corporations, and the twisted truth behind environmentalism. This eye-opening book exposes the true face of communism and empowers you to fight back. Join the fight for freedom. The Anti-Communist Manifesto, a new must-read book from Jesse Kelly. Get your copy today at jessekellybook.com or wherever books are sold.
I still can't believe how scary that guy's voice is. It's awesome. Anyway, today is the day. The day the Anti-Communist Manifesto is available for all. You can order it online. It's at all your bookstores. It's selling like wildfire, so thank you for that. So let's discuss something real quick. By the way, jessekellybook.com is where you can order it online. It's where you can find out about the book tour. It's where you can get your AC pin, your anti-communist pin. We're beginning an anti-communist community. You do all that at jessekellybook.com, but let's discuss something real quick. Anti-communism, anti-communists. Why do we talk about that? What's the point of all that? One, let's focus on what communism is first. Remember this, and I talk about this extensively in the book. Communism is not what the dictionary definition is. It's not about the workers or it's nothing to do with any of that at all. That's why communism has taken on a different form every country where it's been. For China, China's communism, did you know it looked radically different than the communism in the Soviet Union? So it started in the Soviet Union, and again, I talk about this, where the urban poor were really malcontented. They were really unhappy for many valid reasons. The communists, as they were whipping up their revolution in the Soviet Union, They focused on the urban poor because the urban poor were the malcontents in the society, and you can use people's bitterness to destroy things you want destroyed and to give yourself power. So boom, Soviet Union, urban poor. China starts picking up on this communism thing, starts really catching on in certain circles there. And they're working with the Soviet Union, Lenin and Stalin, these guys. So they're working with guys like Mao in China. And Mao starts to have some conflicts with the Soviet communists. Why? Because the Soviet communists were telling Mao, hey, focus on the urban poor. You got to focus on those urban poor. And Mao said, what? No, you don't understand China. We don't have mass amounts of malcontented urban poor here. Our rural poor, those are the malcontents. So that's where we need to go. So the communists in China found a different group of malcontents. Cambodia looked totally different than all the rest of them. America, and most of the West, this isn't unique to America, it looks radically different here than it did there. Why? Because we have different malcontents. And the communists in the 60s and 70s, they actually wrote this down, that they needed to make a shift from all this worker stuff. It was not catching on in the West, to their frustration. They had to make a shift. So where do you shift? Well, you just find people's malcontents. What are the fingers of America's communist fist? What are they really? And these are all laid out in the book in the historical context of them. What are the fingers of the fist? The climate change nutters, the feminists, the, quote, civil rights, Black Lives Matter types, of course, the LGBTQ. These are all fingers of America's communist fist. What do they all have in common? These were the malcontents in our society. The communists, communism, is nothing more than a religion that's the search for any society's malcontents. You search for them, you find them, you use their bitterness to burn society down. That's all communism is. 100 years from now, it'll look totally different than it does here today. So why anti-communism? There's 1,000 of these books, right? Everybody writes a book now of conservatism and libertarianism and nationalism and neoconservative. Why anti-communism? What is the point of that? What am I saying? Well, what I'm saying is we're up against a religion of death and destruction. It is a death cult. And unless they are stopped, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. And to be honest, I find many of these squabbles on the various factions on the right, I find them to be laughable, not because they're not important arguments to have, but because these are pointless arguments to have while the communist has taken over every single institution. These squabbles people have on the right, it's you and I arguing over which color we want to paint the walls while a murderous gang of thugs is kicking down the front door to murder both of us. Why are we arguing about the wall paint? They must be stopped first. Once they are stopped, then we can come back and we can have a knockdown drag out about the wall paint. But until they are stopped, nothing else matters. Anti-communism is all that matters. Why do I speak like that? Well, because I understand history. And you'll read about this in the Anti-Communist Manifesto. Things like 1.7 million dead in Lenin's concentration camps. You know them as gulags. 18 million of those were slave labor camps. Oh, and did I mention, it wasn't just a bunch of murderers and rapists in those camps. It was political prisoners. Can you imagine living in a country where the political party in charge would lock up its political opponents? January 6th, Trump. Could you imagine living in a country like that? Did you know that Joseph Stalin, that he starved millions of people to death in Ukraine? It's known as the Holodomor. You can read about that in the book as well. How many millions of people? Oh, I don't know. Might be 2 million. Might be 10 million. Nobody knows. Why? Because they starved to death in their beds. Families drawing straws to see which family member they would kill and eat that day. That's not something out of the movies. That's what communists have done. Dogs roaming the streets with an arm in their mouth from a hastily buried body. Nobody knows how many the communists killed in Ukraine, because all the mass graves covered it up. It was such a disaster, the numbers can never and will never be known. Did you know that Mao's CCP, they outlawed private farming? They decided these small businesses needed to be a thing of the past. Instead, we're going to do a gigantic fishing. We're going to nationalize the farming industry. All of you gather together on this communal farm. Except when everyone gathered together on the communal farm, they weren't producing. Not everybody was. I mean, sure, the young, strong men were, but gosh, these pregnant women and the kids and the old people, they're kind of a burden. Hey, let's just kill them or let them starve to death. I won't even go into the details of what they did at Pathet prison. I won't even tell you about Cambodia. You can learn about that in the Anti-Communist Manifesto, where they had 15-year-olds beating people to death by the million, 25% of Cambodia's population gone in 4 years. Why do I discuss anti-communism so passionately? Why am I an anti-communist, not a conservative or anything else these people call? Because I understand nothing else matters, nothing, unless these people are defeated. What is coming for America very, very quickly is more horrific than you have ever seen a movie about, more horrific than you can imagine, unless these people are stopped. That's why I write chapter after chapter after chapter after chapter about various parts of American communism, from corporate communism. I write about the education system in this country. I write about the LGBTQ mob. Don't think the Black Lives Matter civil rights hustlers got out. Antifa, did you know that Antifa, today's Antifa, do you know they draw a direct connection between the communist Antifa that was taking place in Weimar, Germany before World War II? And did you know in Weimar, Germany before World War II, they called themselves Antifa? These are the kind of tidbits that are here in the book. We will talk about cultural destruction in the book. That's chapter 2, by the way, if you want a little preview. Cultural destruction. Why do they rename military bases? Is it because they're really passionate about slavery? They're very protective of Black people. Just passionate about human rights. Is that why they remake your street names, remake your military bases, tear down monuments? I've got news for you. That has nothing to do with it whatsoever. You see, the communist destroys your monuments, your history, because the communist is out to destroy you. If you want to hear all this laid out in detail, not only the history of it, all kinds of history, where we're at today, how to fight back against it, go to jessekellybook.com and purchase the Anti-Communist Manifesto today. Now, all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. By the way, you might even find yourself laughing from time to time in the book. I'm going to talk to Senator Ted Cruz next and see if he had anything to laugh about in the book. But you know what's no laughing matter? Your dog. Your dog and his health. You see, you have a dog. Your dog is wonderful. Our dog is an idiot, but he's still wonderful. We love him to death, and we want him around a very long time so he can keep being a big, fluffy idiot and begging for attention at all times and just being who Fred is. That's why we give Fred Rough Greens every day. I don't give Fred Rough Greens every day just because I love naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, who came up with all this, although I do. I give Fred Rough Greens because I want Fred to live an extra 2-3 years he wouldn't have before, and I want those to be healthy years. Not bad breath, eye problems, joint problems, dull coat, too lethargic. I want Fred to live the longest, happiest, healthiest life ever, so I pour Rough Greens on his food twice a day. Nutritional supplement, vitamins, minerals, omega oils, free bags right now. All you pay for is the shipping. Roughgreens.com/Jesse. Or you can call them 833-33-MY-DOG. We'll be back.
The Anti-Communist Manifesto, a new must-read book from Jesse Kelly. Get your copy today at jessekellybook.com or wherever books are sold.
I still love how creepy that guy's voice is. It's very ominous. Joining me now, Senator Ted Cruz from the great state of Texas, author of the book Justice Corrupted. And actually, Senator, before we get to me, which you know is my favorite subject, I actually do want to discuss exactly that right there with all this DOJ news and obviously the anticipation of this indictment of Trump and everything that's happened there. Senator, I never in my life have I heard so many people, regular people, so afraid of their government. It's just a really ominous place to be. People are afraid of this government. It's bad.
Well, and for good reason. And actually, the two books are connected. Justice Corrupted is all about how it starts in the Obama administration, how hardcore leftists took over the Department of Justice, took over the FBI, took over the IRS, and began using them as weapons to attack their political enemies. And it walks through how Richard Nixon had tried that decades before and failed. And what Nixon tried to do, Obama succeeded in doing. Then when Trump became president, what happened was those bitter partisans burrowed into senior positions within the agencies and began waging war on Donald Trump. And the deep state for 4 years of Trump's presidency, they did everything they could to destroy the presidency because they hated the man who'd been elected president and they hated the American people who'd voted for him. And now, with Joe Biden, those vicious partisans have come out in the open. They are brazen. Merrick Garland, and it gives me no pleasure to say this, is the most partisan and political attorney general we've ever had. John Mitchell, who went to prison for his corruption, would roll over in his grave to see how Merrick Garland is perfectly willing to treat the Department of Justice as the political enforcers for the Biden White House. It is frightening, it is dangerous, and I believe Merrick Garland plans to indict Donald Trump like the old communist who worked for Stalin said, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. He knows who he wants to indict, and he's going to find any way to do it.
Can you explain to us, because you know more about this history really than anybody, I understand how they think, I understand that they use power like they're using it now, but why was Nixon unable and these people were able? What changed?
Well, what changed is the system pressed back. When Nixon tried to direct, for example, the IRS to go after his political enemies, when Nixon tried to use the machinery of government, the system pressed back and said, no, that's not our job. We're supposed to be apolitical. We're not supposed to be drawn into this. What changed is that under Obama, Obama was viewed as so enlightened that the system saluted and said, sir, yes, sir. And they were happy. You look at Lois Lerner. Lois Lerner, who ran a major division of the IRS, explicitly targeted conservatives, targeted Tea Party groups. They didn't like the Tea Party because it had risen up from the citizens and it was a threat to government power. They went after citizens groups. Some of the words that made you suspect, if you were a group that focused on the Constitution, that focused on the Bill of Rights, that focused on freedom, that focused on liberty, if you were pro-life, if you were pro-Israel, they targeted you, they persecuted you, they went after you. Now, when that became public, it became public because the Inspector General of the Department of Treasury uncovered it. And in response, Barack Obama held a press conference at the White House, and he said he was angry, and he said the American people have a right to be angry. That was a nod to the way systems were supposed to work. Well, what happened next? The Justice Department stonewalled and protected Lois Lerner. Lois Lerner pleaded the fifth, refused to testify before Congress. Congress held her in contempt, and the Obama Department of Justice refused to prosecute her for that contempt. In other words, Obama's protestations about being angry were lies, and we're seeing that fight play out right now. Right now, we've got Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, doing the same thing, defying Congress, refusing to give over the FBI form where they had evidence, they had allegations that Joe Biden was involved in a $5 million bribery scheme, and the FBI is doing the same thing Lois Lerner did, which is stiff arm, no, we won't give it to you, we don't work for the American people. The House is going to hold him in contempt, and I predict right now the Biden Justice Department will do the same thing that the Obama Justice Department did, which is refuse to prosecute the contempt case.
Ah, what a place to be. You know, let's focus on something happy. Let's focus on me being a world-famous author now. Do you look at me differently?
There you go.
You're a senator. I'm a world-famous author. We're both kind of important.
Well, look, I will say you have all the skills to be a world-famous author. For one thing, I just look at how your camera's framed and my camera's framed. You're at least 6 inches taller than I am. on the TV screen. And that's really well done. I mean, you know, Johnny Carson would have his guests sit down in these short little chairs. And look, that is a dominant, it's a power move, Jesse. It's strong. I got to give you props.
I swear on my life, that was actually accidental, Senator, but I do feel taller today now that I'm a literary master, really. I feel taller, I feel bigger, I feel better than the people I see around me who haven't written a book on communism and fighting back against it. And look, your family has experienced, in all seriousness, experienced real communism in Cuba. You really do know, especially your father, God bless him, knows exactly what it's like.
Yeah, look, you know my dad well, and for me, communism, it's not theoretical, it's not abstract. I hate communists. I hate them to the very depths of my bones. Communists are evil. My father, as a kid, grew up in Cuba, was imprisoned, was tortured. My aunt, my tia Sonia, Fidel Castro's goons, threw her in prison and tortured her. And communism brings misery, suffering, death, poverty. Everywhere it appears, it is vicious, and what's terrifying is communism now is not limited to the Soviet Union or Russia. It's not limited just to China or North Korea or Cuba, but we're seeing communism in America. You are absolutely right in your latest book that the spread of communists through education, through K-12 education, through universities, through corporate America, it is unabashed Marxism. And it is dangerous, and we've got to know what it is, and we've got to stand up and be prepared to fight back at it.
Senator, speaking of the education system, this is something that I know you know well because you've been to all these fancy schools and got perfect grades and things like that. And now parents who have their kids coming up and they want the best for their kids, they want their kids to go to Harvard. They want their kids to go to Princeton. Parents want their kids to be successful and things like that. And what's happened to our elite universities, in my opinion, is one of the most damaging things because these universities produce our senators. You're sitting here.
Yes.
They produce our CEOs. They produce our senators. They produce our presidents. And if they're producing something else now, and they very much are, that's a big problem for the country.
Look, our universities are the Wuhan lab where the woke virus was created. The universities, the Marxists crawled into them. They took them over beginning in the 1960s, beginning in the 1970s. You mentioned Harvard. I went to Harvard Law School. My father would refer to my time up there as missionary work. And there was not a lot of exaggeration. They practically were cannibals ready to boil you in oil. And the amazing thing is when I was there, it was 1,000 times better than it is today. They were just seizing the institution. They had not yet imposed their draconian power to silence dissent. I got to say, you and I are both parents, and it's a hard choice for any parent. Do you pay a university $500,000 to indoctrinate your children to hate America and hate you? And then that's a really lousy situation that we find ourselves with virtually every major university in the country.
That sure is. Senator, appreciate you very much, sir. Keep fighting a good fight.
Thank you, Jesse. I do want to ask briefly, the narrator on your ad, did you find an actual communist to do that ad? Because it really does sound like Che Guevara pulled out of the grave saying, buy Jesse Kelly's book. Well done, my friend.
It does. It's so scary. I'm going to buy it myself, and I have free ones. Senator, thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right. Who's the best? All right, we're getting to Carol Roth next. But before we get to Carol Roth, let us do remember Father's Day is coming. All right? So what do you get Dad? We all get it. Well, obviously you need to get him a book, but seriously, what do you need to get? What are you getting Dad this year? May I suggest to you that your father likes gadgets? You know how I know that? Because all dudes like gadgets. Your father likes gadgets. Your father likes comfortable socks. Dudes do. Your father loves good belts. Grip 6 has a special right now. Pay attention to this. If you go to grip6.com/Jesse, 25% off the entire site. Anything you see on there, these sick wallets like mine, where your cards lock in and you squeeze the button, and they all the wallets, the belts, the socks, 25% off the whole site. Or for Dad, they have 40% off dad packs. You have to go to grip6.com/Jesse. Get dad a dad pack for Father's Day. Stop stressing about what to get dad. Grip6.com/Jesse. We will talk to Carol Roth next.
Welcome back. This is I'm Right with Jesse Kelly, and I'd like to invite in Jesse Kelly, since theoretically it is his show. Jesse, why don't you join me for a second? Because I have a few words I would like to say to you. Welcome to your own show. First of all, I would like to congratulate you on the launch of the Anti-Communist Manifesto. Now, Jesse, I have to say, this is an incredible accomplishment because I didn't know that you could read, let alone write. You wrote an entire book, and it's not even a picture book. So this is a major milestone in all of history, frankly, in your development, and I just wanted to congratulate you. But seriously speaking, everybody who is watching, if you have not purchased this book, I need you to go buy this book right now. I mean, it not only is a great way to support Jesse and his work, but it is full of critical information to empower you. And as a financial expert, I say this is an excellent way to spend both your time and your money. So go get it now. And congrats again, my friend Jesse.
Carol, you are the best. I'm joining Carol now on her show. This is, of course, the great Carol Roth. I don't even think I have to introduce her anymore on this show. She has a new book out her as well called You Will Own Nothing on those World Economic Forum scumbags who are trashing this planet. But, all right, Carol, one, I have obviously never written a book before. I don't know that I will ever write another one. I don't fancy myself a writer. I was just passionate about this subject, so I wrote it, happy with it, done with it. Carol, what's the best and worst thing about writing books? Because there are a lot of very smart people out there. You know, you don't have to have a big platform like Carol Roth. There are a lot of people who want to write something. They don't do it. It seems intimidating. What's the best and worst part of it?
So I think writing it is just getting that information out into the world and letting it empower other people, giving them the tools to be able to discuss topics with their friends that maybe they kind of understood, but you know, didn't have all of the full information, didn't want to do all of the research, or maybe just didn't have the right words to kind of grasp around it. So it really is something that you do for yourself, but in service of other people. And I think that is the greatest part about it. The absolute worst part of it is promoting the book. I know you like to talk about yourself, Jesse, but I don't really like to talk about myself, and I don't like to talk about my things. I don't like to ask people for things. And so it really is hard, you know, to go out and say, hey, could you, you know, spare $30, especially when people are hurting with inflation, on this thing that I spend a ton of time on and I know is going to be valuable for you, but it still is that very uncomfortable ask. And I think people underestimate how incredibly difficult it is to get people to buy books. The greater majority of the books in this country, like almost 90% of them, sell something like 50 copies. It's really, really hard to get people to buy books. So if you have people that you like and you like their work, it's a great way to support them. But also, if it's something that you want to try yourself, do it for the accomplishment and, you know, to put it out to whoever will listen to it, and don't worry about the sales.
That's so weird you don't like to talk about yourself, Carol, because I love talking about me. I'm my favorite subject, and I have no problem telling people to buy my book. I think you should skip, if it's necessary, you should skip several meals if that's what it takes in order to purchase the Anti-Communist Manifesto. But I want to focus on something really quickly, Carol. You are a recovering investment banker, as you like to put it. You are, of course, our financial expert on this show. Corporate America, this big shot financial sector, all the brainiac corporate America. Larry Fink, head of BlackRock, he has, well, this little video has been dropping recently.
You have to force behaviors. And if you don't force behaviors, whether it's gender or race or just any way you want to say the composition of your team, you're going to be impacted. Behaviors across the entire firm in every region have to be similar. And every citizen of the firm has to understand what is acceptable behaviors and what are unacceptable.
Carol, forcing behaviors. Now, I would expect the head of a financial giant like BlackRock or State Street or Vanguard to be all about the dollars and cents. I would expect him to be some ruthless, heartless capitalist sitting there with his monocle in and his cigar on his private jet as he counts his money. But these people, they don't sound like that to me, Carol. They sound like Berkeley Law professor communists. Why?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that in the case of Larry Fink and perhaps some of his comrades there, he's gotten to a level where he has so much wealth and so much power that it has given him somewhat, in my opinion, of a God complex. And so, you know, that the next level up, like there isn't more money he can accumulate that sort of changes his standing. Now he has to say, you know, if I have a philosophy, then I'm going to force that upon the world. And he has been very closely tied with the World Economic Forum. He's been saying things for quite some time. In 2020, he had a shareholder letter where he basically said, you know, we're going to be allocating capital. We are going to be voting with management teams and directors who do the things that we tell them they should do, you know, sustainability, ESG, all of these special buzzwords, which are basically cover for what I think is important and what I'd like to happen and my agenda along with the other global elite. And if you do not follow along, you will not get our dollars, which given the fact that he controls around $10 trillion under BlackRock in terms of assets under management and is the leading asset manager in the world, and that level of capital makes BlackRock and or Vanguard or State Street one of the top investors and basically every publicly traded company out there, this is a form of bullying at the highest degree. And it's horrendous because it's taking your and my money, retirees' money, pension fund money, and he is leveraging that to his gain. It is corporate social credit. It is corporate fascism, and it has absolutely nothing to do with capitalism.
I actually have a whole chapter on that in my book, and I know you've written about it too. But Carol, what don't they look at the bottom line of Anheuser-Busch, right? Obviously, everyone knows about the Bud Light news. It's been all in the news. You're losing billions. Target's losing billions of dollars. Even some corporate communist piece of trash like Larry Fink, doesn't he wake up one day and look at the profit loss sheet and say to himself, okay, well, this isn't working anymore. We need to change direction. Why aren't they changing direction?
Because it's longer term visibility versus sort of short term thinking. He's willing to forego what's happening in the short term to have the long term, you know, kind of power and shaping the world in the way that he wants to shape it. And from all of these CEOs who are making decisions that you go, why would they possibly make that decision? It's because they're frightened. They're frightened that they're going to lose their jobs. They are frightened that they are not going to get the shareholder votes. They are frightened that they're not going to get the capital allocation, just as we saw the entire financial services industry move away from oil and gas. They're worried that is going to happen to them. And so when you hear Larry Fink out there saying like this, he's basically signaling to them, it's okay to have sort of this you know, up and down in the midterm, because you have to go along with our program in the long term. And it is a complete shift in the way that capitalism works, in the way that Wall Street has worked in the past. And it is a frightening new development. And again, the most infuriating part is that they are using our own capital to be able to do this hostage taking.
Yes, what's the wildest thing? It's our own daggone money. Carol Roth, her book is You Will Own Nothing, and it is freaking fantastic. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, and go buy the Anti-Communist Manifesto today, before it's too late. You need it now. Congrats, Jesse.
You're getting the hang of it now, Carol. All right. Now, this next segment, I don't know what to tell you. My mentor, the only reason I do this show, the only reason I'm in this business, Michael Berry, he joins us next. Where this is going to go, I have no earthly idea. So I guess you and I will find out together. Before we get to that, let's do something real quick. Obviously, financial times are getting a little bumpy. Everyone's cutting expenses right now. And I know that timeshare you're paying for looks like a gigantic birthmark on your skin. You want it gone. It hurts. It hurts your budget. You don't want it anymore. And I know they've told you, you have to keep it. No, sorry, you signed the contract. Sorry. Pay your annual fees. Pay your special assessments. I know what they do. But you need to understand this. Lone Star Transfer caught on to this scam a long time ago. They will get you out of your timeshare. You know how I know? Because they're 99% successful. 99%. This is a family company. They've helped over 18,000 people get out. They guarantee it. They put it in writing. They even give you a time frame. You're one phone call away from freedom, so make that phone call. 844-310-2646. 844-310-2646, all right? Or LoneStarTransfer.com. We'll be back.
Anti-Communist Manifesto, a new must-read book from Jesse Kelly. Get your copy today at jessekellybook.com or wherever books are sold.
It is must-read. Man, I'm so important. Joining me now to talk about that importance is the czar of talk, as everyone knows, the only reason I even do media for a living, my mentor, Michael Berry. Michael, just tell me, is this the proudest you've ever been of me? Now that I'm a world famous author, are you so proud of me?
Well, they said to act excited about the book. I didn't know how. Dude, I'm so excited.
Well,
could not be. What's the name of this book? I love the fact that the URL is Jesse Kelly Book. You know, our mutual friend Shane had one song that went viral, and the name of the album was Greatest Hit. Greatest Hit, Jesse Kelly Book. I hope y'all got the S just in case.
Michael, look, as you well know, I'm a simple man. All right, so I wanted the website to be simple. I wanted everything to be simple because I am kind of white trash and low IQ, and simple is how I follow along with everything. It makes my life easier.
Why don't you tell people what you're driving now? Go ahead, I'll wait. I'm here.
That's not necessary what you're doing right now. No. See what he's doing right now, Mike.
You were driving an old truck.
What he's doing right now. I was driving a pickup truck. Okay, and then Michael talked.
Jesse Kelly is not who he
is.
The common
it's
name.
Not it. I would.
You're worse.
That's not true.
Play Travis now. You're up in that realm.
That's not true. I was driving a pickup truck. The sunroof broke, and I was having air conditioning problems. And then, thanks to Michael, I ended up with this new career, and I signed a new contract, and I was feeling excited, and I've never done anything. I went out and bought a midlife crisis car, which I'll be giving up in a year back to a pickup truck, Michael. That's the reality of what happened.
Oh, that's true. And your original defense, when I called you out on it, when you drove into the garage, because I thought it was some rapper, was, well, you know, most... 6'10", you know, most of these cars, and this is going, oh, really? Really? You spent a couple $100,000 on a car because it has the right headroom, Shaq? I'm not buying that. Let's talk about your book, shall we? I'm excited. I'm actually genuinely excited. I'm jealous. I have tried to start a book multiple times, never got finished. I'm proud of you.
Now, why have you never written a book, Michael? You've been on the air for a lot longer than I have, and you've got a lot to say, and everyone loves your show. Why no book? Because now I have this prestige, Michael, where I'm one of the important people. I'm an author. You know, I'm not just a TV host or a radio host. Now, I'm basically Hemingway and Shakespeare and Jesse Kelly. Those are the names that are on the Mount Rushmore of authorship, if that's a word.
Hold it up again so we can all see it for ourselves. Hold the book up. Oh, yes. Oh, quite nice. Why didn't you put your picture on? You, of all people, should have put your picture on. You know,
now, hold on. One.
I don't have, it's a true story. True story. Rush Limbaugh used to say that the only reason he wrote only a couple of books was he doesn't have an iron butt. You and I have talked seriously off air on how much work it is to do what you just did. And we don't want to keep doing that. It's hard work.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. It definitely is. It has to be something you want to do. One, I do have my picture on the, it's on one of the covers. The picture is in there on one of the covers. That's one. Two, I don't like to focus on me, Michael. I'm more of a person who cares about others. I'm not one of these narcissists who only wants to talk about himself and his book and all that other stuff.
Question for you. Do you get paid a lot of money for that?
It's funny you asked that because the answer to that question is, I don't know yet. And I really mean this. Everyone asks, everyone keeps asking me, so are you going to make a bunch of money? Do you make a bunch of money? I never asked. I just am not a curious person about details in this way. I never asked what people make from books. If you told me I made 5 cents for every book sold, I would believe you. If you told me I made $10 for every book sold, I would believe you. I don't know how it works. I haven't gotten any checks in the mail. Today's the first day it's available, so I don't know what I get paid. I don't know. Hopefully it's a lot, though.
I looked up the pre-sale numbers with somebody I know in the industry, and pre-sale numbers suggest that even at a nickel apiece, you've already made a small fortune. And you know what? Good for you. How do you like my new scar? It looks good, doesn't it? My first time on TV.
Yeah, it does look good. I'm really sad to admit this because I knew that I knew that you'd had an accident, and I knew that there was going to be a scar, and I kind of wanted it to be a lame scar or something a little girlier so I could make fun of you for it. But instead, it's one of those above the eye scars, and instead those just make you look. Oh, they look better. They make you look better. The chicks dig that, and I hate that.
Yeah, this is really interesting stuff. So, serious question. And I always ask authors this, since I'm interviewing you here on your show. I always ask authors, when is your time to write? Are you a get up early and write? Are you a go to bed just before you go to bed and write? Are you every stolen moment? Are you a dictate and later, you know, your staff of people don't even know how many people work for you. That blows my mind. But anyway, we'll get back to that in a minute. So when do you write?
I'm a little different in this in that I don't like to write. I do not like to write. I like to do TV. I like to do radio. I do not enjoy writing. So the only time I could write this ever is whenever something popped into my head. And I'm embarrassed to say sometimes that would be when I wake up in the morning. Sometimes it would be the middle of the night. I wake up in the middle of the night and something would pop into my head. I would have to get up and do it because if I let it sit, then I'll either forget or it won't be as good. Maybe it would be during one of my shows and I'll be writing during the commercial break. Oh crap, that was good. I need to get that in the book. Whenever it pops in, I don't have the luxury of waiting until I'm in the Nancing in the gardens of France or wherever it is people go. Wherever it is, I had to do it right then and there or it would never get done.
How did you know, okay, it's time to put it to? Because it strikes me your first book and a book that calls itself a manifesto, you know, I'm reading about the history of the Encyclopedia Britannica and they could never put it to bed because you keep learning new things. How did you come to the point that you said, this is it, I'm done?
I wanted to do a certain number of subjects. I view communism in America as having many different fingers, as I talk about all the time. And all I wanted to do was hit those. And I tried to hit those in the book. I guess we'll see if I succeeded or not, in a way that was specific but general enough that it would still matter 10 years from now. You could pick it up and it would make sense to you. So in order to avoid, like you mentioned, there's always a new thing, there's always a new controversy, there's always a new thing that you would want to put in there, I tried to keep it more general action stuff so people would, like I said, 10 years from now you pick it up, you'll get it. You'll read it and you'll understand what you're looking at.
So you know how Bill O'Reilly does this? There's always a guest author and you figure that guy actually wrote the thing. And yeah, it's always, you know, Lincoln's killing or whatever else. If this book by Jesse Kelly, The Anti-Communist Manifesto, and one of those 35 books that Bill O'Reilly's written with a ghostwriter along with him, if they were to get in the octagon, who would win?
Well, Bill's been doing it a long time, and Bill's had a lot of books, but I have to say, I think this might be next to the Bible. Obviously, it's underneath the Bible, but setting the Bible aside, this might be the most important literary work in human history. So I would have to say that my book would definitely be the winner there, for sure.
You were putting this book up against Glenn Beck, and you're looking at both the authors and the books. What would people say about this book versus Glenn Beck?
That Glenn Beck's books were definitely written by somebody much, much more intelligent who has a much higher intellect than my book. That's what I'm pretty sure they'd say, Michael.
Probably, but not Glenn Beck. Is that what we're getting out of this?
No, no. What we're getting out of this is I'm not an author. I don't know. I'm not an author. I wrote a book because I'm very passionate about anti-communism. I'm passionate about spreading the word about it.
I don't want to buy it now. This is supposed to be your passion. So excited about
Everyone wants... No, Michael, what I'm doing is I'm doing the same thing everyone does when they run for president. I'm acting like I never wanted to run, but so many people have asked me to run. In order to save America, I was forced to run for president. Look, I didn't want to write a book, but I knew America was about to die if I didn't write that book. So that's why I wrote the Anti-Communist Manifesto. Michael, I will give you the last word. I got to go.
Look, dude, I'm proud of you. I'm excited. I mean, watching you develop as a media personality, you're already a Marine, you're already a great guy, you're already a great dad, great husband. I'm so incredibly, your success is my success, all joking aside, I'm so incredibly proud of you. This is just one more step in a stratospheric career. And I mean that. Love you. Thanks, bud.
Appreciate it, my man. Yeah, I owe it all to you. Thank you so much. Michael Berry, everybody. All right, that's enough. We do have a couple reviews, and we'll get to those in a second before we check out of here. Before we do that, let's take care of something for you. Let's take care of those allergies you have. No, I'm not selling you medication. You know my thoughts on medication. I don't like it. I want different solutions. I took those little over-the-counter allergy pills for years. Since I was 10 years old, I've had to take them because my eyes itch so daggone bad whenever allergy season would come around. You know, I don't even own it anymore. It's not in my house. Why? Not a new pill. Eden Pure Thunderstorms. The greatest air purifier ever. Called the Thunderstorm because it does in your home what nature does after a thunderstorm. When you walk outside and after a storm and it smells so fresh and clean, that's because your air is clean. It cleaned your air. Eden Pure does that inside of your home. Put it where you sleep, in your general living area, where your kids sleep. Watch your family be healthier. Three packs. $200 off right now. You have to go to EdenPureDeals.com to get that, though. Three packs. EdenPureDeals.com. Code Jesse is how you get $200 off. Go now. I've got a bone to pick with you. Everybody knows by now that I cannot stand the word literally. Because people have abused it to the point where they literally can't talk without literally using it literally every 15 seconds. It's awful. The word's dead. Stop using the word literally. And everyone knows that's my pet peeve. And so today's this day, my first book ever, maybe my only book ever comes out. And I'm excited and it's selling awesome. Thank you for that. But I look at the reviews online. And guess what you're doing? You're literally bombing my reviews. And that's the best way I can put it. It's literally bombing. Meaning you have all these reviews online and you use the word literally just to get to me. This was from Climb to Safety. Jesse Kelly knocked a book out of the park. That one was nice, but then the literally crowd found it. Literally great. This one said literally the best book. It literally is. This one said this is literally one of the best books ever written. So on and so forth. Oh, there's several more. I'm stopping it short for the purpose of time. That's not very nice. I'm nice. You're not being nice with this use of the word literally. But honestly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. I can't believe it's been a success and it's awesome. Good gift for dad, friends, family, sons, daughters. JesseKellyBook.com. Go pick it up. I think you'll enjoy it. See you tomorrow.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.